Okay, so today I want to talk a little bit about the story of Moshe Rabbeinu hitting the rock instead of speaking to the rock, which apparently was the most personally damaging mistake of Moshe Rabbeinu's entire long and very productive life. It's a very challenging section of Chumash to understand why this particular mistake caused him so much grief. It caused him to lose out on his dream. If this is what cost Moshe his life's dream, it had to have been a very significant thing, and yet the exact nature of the Avera that he did, what exactly he did wrong, is somewhat elusive to us, so much so that there are probably dozens of explanations in the Rishonim and Achronim exactly what he did wrong. Now, one thing is clear: Hashem told Moshe to take the stick in his hand and then blames Moshe. Why did you use the stick? Why did you have to hit the rock for? What was Moshe supposed to assume the stick was there for, if not to use it, if not to hit the rock? After all, back in Parshas B'Shalach, that's exactly what he was supposed to do. Why would Hashem tell him to take the stick if he was only supposed to speak to the rock? Also, it seems that the sin was one of emuna, right? That's what it says in Chumash. Ya'an ki lo ha'amantim bi'lakti sheni, that you didn't express emuna in me, the Ribbono Shel Olam. However, Rashi takes a little bit of a different tone, and Rashi writes, "Ilu dibartem el asela vahotzi hayisi mekudash le'inei ha'eda." Had you spoken to the sela and brought out water, drawn out water, it would have been a kiddushim shemayim in front of the eda, in front of Klal Yisrael, va'om, and people would have said, "Ma hasela hazeh she'inu medaber ve'inu shemaya ve'inu tzarech leparnasa mekayim diburu shel makom." If this rock that doesn't speak, it's totally inanimate and it doesn't hear and it doesn't require any parnasa, and it's still nevertheless mekayim the Dibur of the Ribbono Shel Olam, Kal V'chomer Anu. So we, who have so much greater capacity than a domeim, than a rock that just sits there, we have much greater capacity to do and to listen and to learn. So of course we should be mekayim the diburim of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the chisaron emuna wasn't in Moshe, although it says yana amantem, but it's not Moshe's lack of emuna, but it was in the people after Moshe failed to build up their emuna by talking to the rock. Meaning that Moshe Rabbeinu, because he didn't do what he was supposed to do, it was a missed opportunity to develop the emuna of the people who would have witnessed this event of Moshe Rabbeinu speaking to the rock. Now that seems somewhat strange, because from a miracle standpoint, if you're just assessing a miracle, what difference does it make if water comes out after hitting or after talking to a rock? Both of those things are totally unnatural. Neither of those things is an expected result. If you see a fellow and he walks over to a rock and he starts talking to it and he says, and the rock all of a sudden sprouts water, that would be miraculous. If you see a fellow takes a stick and bangs on the rock and all of a sudden a fountain starts shooting out, that too would be miraculous. So why is it that one is a greater emuna builder than the other? We can't do either of those things. Why would the emuna of Klal Yisrael have been so much deeper and more profound had they witnessed the miracle of the rock that was spoken to rather than the miracle of the rock that was beaten? And third, the Torah is explicit about the repercussions of hitting the rock. Yano amantim bi, lachein lo savi'u. That there's a clear correlation between the crime and the punishment. This is what we call mida keneged mida. There's a clear reciprocity over here, that because Moshe Rabbeinu did not speak to the rock and he hit the rock, he doesn't get to lead Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. In fact, the Balaturim sees in the word lachein that it's ki'ilu a higher level of mida keneged mida. Lachein, he says, is the same gematria as mida bimida. So it's alluded to in the word lachein that this is a mida keneged mida. What's the mida keneged mida? How does failure to speak to a rock relate to being kept out of the promised land, relate to being kept out of Eretz Yisrael? So again, three basic questions. What exactly was Moshe's purpose in taking the stick if he wasn't meant to use the stick? Second, why is it that it would have been such a greater builder of emuna if Moshe Rabbeinu would have spoken to the rock rather than hit the rock? It seems to me that they're both equally great builders of emuna. And third, why is it that it's mida keneged mida, or what exactly is the mida keneged mida? To the point that the Baal HaTurim thinks that it's alluded to in the gematria of mida b'mida, that you don't get to bring Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. So there is a Yalkut Shimoni that provides some further details on the conversation that Moshe Rabbeinu never had with the rock. Did you ever stop and think, what was he supposed to say to the rock? I mean, what was that conversation supposed to look like? You ever talk to Iraq? What's it? Tom Hanks spoke to a volleyball for much of a movie, but what was he supposed to what was he supposed to say to the rock exactly? Well, how's that conversation supposed to go? Hi, Rock. I'm Moshe. May I have some water, please? How exactly was that meant to play out? So the Yalkut Shimoni explains, "V'dibarta melasela sha'amdu sham v'ikisam lo nemar amrlei kishanar kata." And when you have a child who's very young, Rabbi Makehu Malamdo, the Rebbe hits him and he teaches him. When the child gets a little bit older, the child grows a little bit, he no longer physically hits him. Rather, he uses words, strong words sometimes, but he uses words. Kach Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe. So to Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Kasher Hoya Hasela Katan, Hikisa Oso, Shremer Vikisa Betzur. When the rock was young, when the rock was little, back in Parshas Beshalach, oh, that's when you were supposed to hit it. Aval Achshav V'dibartim El Hasela. But now that you're a little more advanced and the rock is a little bit older, now you're supposed to talk to it. Shana Olav Perek Echad, V'motzi mayim in Hasela. Says the Yalkut Shimoni, what was he supposed to say? Not, hello, I'm Moshe, can I have some water? I heard that you're a rock that knows how to give water. None of that, no. Shana Olav Perek Echad. He was supposed to learn some Torah with the rock. He was supposed to learn Torah in the proximity of the rock, I don't know, near the rock. He was supposed to learn Torah by the rock, and then it was supposed to be Motzi Mayim. Apparently, that was the Dibur that we're talking about. Now, what value could there have been to such a chavrusa, right? To a chavrusa that doesn't argue back, that just sits there like a domain. We've all had chavrusas like this. So what value is there to such a chavrusa, like a rock, that just sits there? So Rabbi Bezalel Radinsky, in his Mishkan Bezalel, explains, based on a remarkable story that we all know from Sefer Yehoshua, Perek Tezvav. In Sefer Yehoshua, we're going through the 14 years of Kibush V'Chiluk Haaretz. Most of the Sefer is dedicated to the years of Kibush V'Chiluk Haaretz. And we're in the midst of conquering the land, and Kalev, who was very old at the time, had to find somebody who was going to lead the very difficult battle to conquer Kiryas Sefer. Now, in order to motivate someone to step up and to take leadership, Kalev announced, "Kol mi asher yakes kiryas sefer v'lachta, v'nasati lo asach sabiti l'isha." That whoever manages to conquer kiryas sefer, the reward is my daughter. You get my daughter's hand in marriage. She'll marry whoever is the great warrior that conquers kiryas sefer. So, sure enough, who stepped up? The great tzaddik, the great shofet, Asniel ben Kenaz, and they lived happily ever after. He led the battle, he became the son-in-law of Kalev ben Yefuna. Wow, what a yichus, what a family. Great story, all's well that ends well. However, Chazal criticized Kalev for this deal. He got lucky. It worked out. It happened to have been Asniel ben Kenaz. But Chazal say, you know, it could have been anybody. It could have been, Chazal say, an Eved, a Mamzer, who would have stepped up and won that battle. And then what would have been? You would have ruined the whole yichus of your family with an Eved or a Mamzer. So what was Kalev thinking? It wasn't a smart idea. He got lucky. It worked out, but it was not a great idea. What's so interesting, though, is that when Chazal asked that question, that it could have been anybody. You know, what examples would you give of anybody that it could have been? You know, it could have been someone totally inappropriate for Kalev's family. So it's true, Eved and Mamzer are inappropriate for Kalev's family by virtue of their yichus, but there are other people that are also inappropriate for Kalev's family. Why not say it could have been a boor v'ama aretz? It could have been a nobody. After all, Chazal say, you're not allowed to marry your daughter off to an ama aretz. Just like Chazal say, you're not supposed to marry the daughter of an ama aretz. So how could Kalev not be a little more selective in who his son-in-law was going to be? It could have been a total ama aretz. How come Chazal don't pick on that? They're only worried about the yichus. They're not worried about the quality of the person himself. After all, can a boor v'ama aretz not be a great general in battle? Is he not going to be able to conquer a city, to conquer Kiryas Sefer? So a proper bechina for a man of Kalev's stature would have been to test him in learning. Why does the winner of a battle competition get to marry Kalev's daughter? So the Yarvei Nachal explains that the very conquering of Eretz Yisrael was completely dependent on Torah. If there was a challenge in conquering a part of the land, the person who stood the best chance of rising to that challenge was the greatest Talmud Chacham, that Eretz Yisrael is not a land like any other. Eretz Yisrael is a land that is infused with Kedusha, that is built on Kedusha, and that our relationship to it is based on Kedusha. And that's why even when Chazal criticize Kalev, they're not concerned that it's going to be a Bor Va'amaretz, because a Bor Va'amaretz would never be successful in conquering Kiryas Sefer. It was, of course, going to be a Talmud Chacham, but guess what? Even a Mamzer could be a Talmud Chacham, right? That's a mission in Horios. A Mamzer Talmud Chacham is called the Kohen Gadol Ha'aretz when it comes to Hachyosa, when it comes to certain things. But a Mamzer Talmud Chacham is not appropriate for Kalev's family either. That was Chazal's concern. Of course it was going to be a Talmud Chacham. It wasn't going to be a Bor Va'amaretz. Bor Va'amaretz would stand no chance. The rocks of Eretz Yisrael are infused with Torah. The idea of kissing the ground of Eretz Yisrael, that's something that's firmly entrenched in our religion. That's it's been happening since Jews have been coming to Israel. There's been this sense that people get down on the ground and they kiss the ground of Israel. It used to be that when you'd fly into Israel when I was a kid, you'd have steps that go off the plane and you can go straight onto the ground instead of going through a thing into the airport. It loses some of its luster if you're kissing carpet in the airport. But it used to be that people would get off the plane, they'd walk down those steps, and they would kiss the ground. They would get on the ground, kiss the ground of Eretz Yisrael. That's something that's a very Jewish thing, that we kiss the ground of Eretz Yisrael, because the ground of Eretz Yisrael has Kedusha. Walking on the ground of Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah according to the Gemara. Every dalet amos that a person walks is a mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael. The only people that could be zocha to the land are those who Torah is their very essence and their very core. It's only the zochus of Torah, not just learning Torah, but living Torah, that grants us access to Eretz Yisrael. And maybe that, says Rabbi Rudinsky, can answer the questions that we began with. The rock is symbolic, as the Medrash tells us, the Medrash says explicitly, Yalkut Shimoni, is symbolic of the chinuch of a child. At first, when one is mechanech a child, they're much more forceful, because he has not yet made the Torah a part of him, and you have to sort of make sure that he's in line at the very beginning, at the very early ages. And then after some training, the goal is to be able to expose the Torah Hashkafa that lies inside of him, that's already become a part of him, through speech alone, without having to be so much more forceful. And Moshe Rabbeinu was told to hold the stick, but not to use it. Demonstrate that you don't need the stick anymore. But there's no demonstration if you don't even have it. Demonstrate that even though there's a stick here, the Kedusha has already been infused. Just like we infuse Kedusha in people, we infuse Kedusha in our children and Talmidim and generations, we infuse Kedusha in Eretz Yisrael. And once Eretz Yisrael has that Kedusha, that's what the rock is. The rock is representative of the idea that even a rock can have Kedusha. Even land can have Kedusha. And once that Kedusha has been developed, then it comes out so much more easily. You no longer need to use the stick. When the Medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu should learn Perek Echa to get the water out, should learn Torah with it, it means that the demonstration was supposed to be such that when water would not emerge, a little bit of Torah learning would cause it to emerge. That when there's inherent Kedusha that's already there, exposure to more Kedusha brings out that inherent Kedusha. And that's why maybe there's a direct correlation between hitting the rock and being denied entry into Eretz Yisrael. We're only ready for Eretz Yisrael when we've sufficiently internalized the Torah that it becomes part of our being. Only someone who's a Talmud Chacham would be able to conquer Eretz Yisrael, would be able to infuse Kedusha into the land. And once that Kedusha is there, then we're going to be able to access it for future generations. That's where Shachter points out, Yerushalmi says in the beginning of Kiddushin, that it took 14 years for Kibush V'chilu Ka'aretz. And then in the days of Ezra, when we came back again, how long did it take? A minute. You come back in and that's it. The Kedusha's there already. It's waiting for us. It doesn't take 14 years the second time around. Once it's been infused with Kedusha, once it's been the Kedusha has been built up, the Kedusha's always there. It just needs to be uncovered. So this was a vital mistake for Moshe Rabbeinu, to not recognize that development over time, that yes, Parshas Beshalach was a time to hit the rock, Parshas Beshalach was a time to very forcefully make sure that Kedusha enters, but once it's there, recognize that it remains, recognize that it's still there, and that you can access it much more easily. And then the way to access it is through our own self-improvement and learning Torah and being able to expose expose ourselves to Torah. I think that's, you know, obviously a very critical message in terms of chinuch. Rav Albi has a famous sefer, Zrio Binyan B'chinuch, that there's a difference between those who plant and those who build. When you build, you know, building is hitting the rock. Building is making sure that everything is exactly the way you want it. You're building the entire structure, and it is the way you construct it. Zriya is more dynamic and more free flowing kind of growth. When you're Zareya, you plant and then it grows on its own, and then you put the seeds in the ground, but it goes in whichever direction it goes, and it could be guided in some way or another, but you're not really in control anymore of exactly how it's going to develop. So that's the idea of chinuch. It starts with the hitting of the rock. I'm not suggesting that we hit any talmidim or anything. That's no longer an effective method of chinuch, but it starts with a more structured and rule oriented type of development of training children in Avodas Hashem. And then, as it gets older, it turns into much more of a Zriya. The planting was already done, and it's just an exposure to Kedusha, an exposure to the beauty of Kedusha, to being able to see people who live lives of Kedusha. And that exposure brings out, from someone who had it put in them at a very young age, it brings out that connection to Kedusha, that desire for Kedusha. Maybe that's one of the many messages that we can get from Moshe Rabbeinu and the rock. Okay.